Greetings, humans. You have entered the Command Zone, your destination for all aspects of Elder Dragon Highlander. Enjoy your stay.
What's up with the double kick drum? All the silly, silly stuff. Hey everybody, how's it going? Welcome back to another episode of The Command Zone. It's episode number 48. I'm your host, Jimmy Wong.
How's it? It's Josh Lee Kwai.
And together we form two hosts.
Together we form Voltron.
Yeah. We've enchantment aura'd the host game, and we are ready to swing in for lethal.
For the win?
Yeah, for the win. Thanks for listening, guys. And good, we're out.
This is a good start.
We have a spicy meatball of an episode coming up for you guys. This is a deck tech for one of Josh Lee Kwai's amazing brews.
Well, the cool part about it is that I built this deck with the help of a lot of our listeners on Twitter.
Yeah.
So I had sort of the outline of how it would go. It's based on one specific card, which ironically, I don't know if irony is the right word, is not the commander in my way. So it's sort of like the Tim deck in that way.
Right.
And
it's also kind of against the spirit of EDH. Just a
It is. It's actually one of these, the listeners pointed out, I built a deck that makes me hate K-Mole even more than I
even
already
more,
did.
Yeah.
Because it will hose this deck.
K-Mole, by the way, is Dragonlord Kolaghan, who came out in Dragons of Darkir.
Who I do not like because, well, whatever. Go listen to that episode, the Dragons of Darkir review, if you want to know why.
And we'll explain this more later when we get into it, of course.
But first, I wanted to talk about something I've been watching a lot lately.
Mm-hmm.
A cool thing that I think, if you don't know about it and you listen to our show, you'll really like it. It's called The Mana Source on YouTube. A lot of you probably know about it.
Wedge
is a buddy of ours. He was on our Overperformers episode. If you go to YouTube and type in The Mana Source, you will find a whole ton of videos.
Yeah.
They do, I don't know, a few videos a week, sometimes four, sometimes five. They've done Commander deck techs. They actually did a Sidisi deck one I was just watching.
Yeah.
It's very interesting because we have a Sidisi episode with Brian David Marshall, BDM, and he talks about his Sidisi deck. And then to watch the EDH deck tech on the Mana Source of their Sidisi deck, it's not the exact same. So you get a good look at different ways you can build a deck or some of the things that you could change about it. So that's pretty fun.
It's certainly not a spider spawning deck, right?
No. They have their own take on it, but it's pretty cool just to see another way to build a deck. So, and also, you know, theirs is a video, so you know how
you can get
do
through a whole deck tech in 10 minutes, which is great.
Yeah, and you know how we do videos where you can see all the cards as we're talking about it. They do similar things, so that, you know, that's very, makes it easier to digest in some ways.
Yeah, Wedge and his team do really great stuff. Wedge is also just a huge part of the Magic community, and that is something that is still in sort of its early growing
infancy
stages. Yeah. And it's really important for creators like Wedge to be around because they are one of our sole providers of content on YouTube in video format. And we turn our podcast into videos because we believe in the same thing, which is it's important for people to be able to see the cards and to have something to look at when they're also listening to it. Because I think it's, you know, especially when it comes to learning and both your parents are teachers, having that visual stimulus is super important.
Well, it's two forms of recall, right? So anytime you just hear something, you're gonna have a certain like level of recall about it. But if you hear it and see it, that's why like writing something just helps you remember it better, because you also, you know, it's a physical and a mental, you know, form of recall. So you combine those and you just have a better chance of remembering. Wedge does a whole ton of stuff that's not just EDH videos too. We talked about this last time, but you know, we've been asked, how many times have we been asked about Tiny Leaders?
Too many to count on one hand, that's
and
for sure.
I feel bad because we always are like, well, I would love to do it, I just haven't played it. You know, and
I'd much rather play EDH right now.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, like, we can't play EDH every night. So anytime we get together with all of our buddies to play, we're going to play EDH or we're going to draft. Those are the two things we like, and it's just hard to fit Tiny Leaders into that.
Yeah, especially when not everyone that we know has a Tiny Leaders deck built.
Yeah, or could even, I don't have one built.
I don't have one built. I mean, I'm sure I could have one built, but in terms of just like, hey, everyone want to play? Who wants to build a Tiny Leaders deck before we play next? It's just hard for us to get that going. And, you know, there could be that spark someday, but we don't have it in our play group yet. But Wedge does have deck techs on Tiny Leaders decks, which is awesome, because he did, like, Cami of the Crescent Moon recently, which is actually a commander I've always wanted to build
right
around.
Right up my alley.
Yeah, right? It's just got that awesome effect. But he also does Legacy deck techs, Standard deck techs. So if, you know, we always send people over to our sister podcast if they want modern content. Wedge's channel just has a little bit of everything, and
they
it's
have
all
lore
quality.
Videos. And you know, I thought I wouldn't really like the lore videos, but they're pretty interesting. It's pretty cool, and I'm actually getting to know a little bit at least about the lore of Magic, where I knew like very little before because it just didn't interest me.
Yeah,
and then they do like cool stuff like the worst cards in the history of Magic. That's one of my favorite videos of theirs. It's just
pretty
funny.
Great.
And there's been some like horrendous cards where you're like, what the hell were they thinking?
Yeah, I can't believe this exists.
Yeah, so definitely the Mana Source on YouTube. Go check them out. Go check out Wedge. You can find him at the Mana Source on Twitter also. Mm-hmm. He's just a great member of the community. He's doing awesome content, something we like to support. So we encourage you to check him out.
Yeah, and let him know that we sent you, because anytime I get a chance to have some Twitter talks with Wedge, I'm always down, because it's always fun.
He's
it's
a
always
guy.
A lot of fun. Yeah, definitely. All right, so let's move on to the deck tech. Josh, once again, you've come up with a brew that does not rely on the actual commander as much as it does on a key creature in the deck.
Yeah, so let's talk about that key card. It is the Shadowborn Apostle.
It's a common.
It's a common from M14.
Oh, boy.
It costs one black. It's a 1/1 human cleric. Are you on board with it yet, Jimmy?
No.
So the very first line of text is the text, of course, that grabbed me. And it just says, a deck can have any number of cards named Shadowborn Apostle.
Ooh, so this is one of those rare cases where a card's text overrules the rules of the game.
Correct. There's a few cards like this. Relentless Rats prominently is one of them. So here we go. We don't have to adhere to the singleton rule of the format.
Right. This is why Dragonlord Kolaghan, by the way, hoses this deck.
Yes, because you're going to play a lot of Shadowborn Apostles. We'll talk about that in a minute. He has second text. So you can have as many Shadowborn Apostles as you want. They're 1-mana 1/1s. There are human clerics. That matters. And they also have the ability, pay a black, and then sacrifice 6 creatures named Shadowborn Apostle. Then search your library for a demon card and put it onto the battlefield, then shuffle your library.
Wow.
So it cheats out a demon, but it's at the cost of sacrificing 6 Shadowborn Apostles.
Which would be about 6 mana.
6 mana, and you have to have drawn 6 of them and played 6 of them. So it's actually 7 mana, too, because you got to pay 1 to sacrifice them.
So this card is, what is it called? Unplayable, usually.
I thought you were going to say something else, but yeah. It's a bad card.
Yeah, it is straight up a terrible card because, I mean, imagine if you had this in Limited. This had to be one of the last things out of each pack in M14.
I played a lot of M14. I never saw a single Shadowborn Apostle cast ever.
Yeah.
Because how many could you ever get?
Yeah.
You'd never be able to get, even if you had 6 in your deck, what are the chances that you ever drew 6 and played them? And then you also have to have a demon. Yeah. So it's unplayable. Here's the thing. You want to pair this with a commander that can get stuff back from your graveyard
or into your hand.
Yeah. So because you're going to sacrifice 6 of these dudes to cheat out a demon.
Mm-hmm.
So you want a commander that deals with the graveyard, sacrificing stuff, you know, putting stuff in your graveyard. So the one that I chose is here. Do you want to read them?
Yes, it is a god from Born of the Gods. I don't know where Athreos is from. Actually, it's Athreos,
born.
God of Passage. He's 1 white and a black for an indestructible 5/4 legendary enchantment creature god, and he's not a 5/4 off the bat. Your devotion to white and black, it has to be 7 or more, and then he becomes a creature.
Yep.
And whenever another creature you own dies, return it to your hand unless target opponent pays 3 life. There's the important text right there.
So he's a guy that wants a lot of little creatures to die so that your opponent is in the precarious position of like, well, either they got to take 3 damage for each of them,
mm-hmm,
or they got to return them to your hand. So a big creature dying is no brainer. I'll take 3 damage.
Yeah.
A bunch of 1/1s. Well, I can't sustain that forever. So I kind of have to start bouncing them back to your hand when they die. And so that's why Shadowborn Apostle lines up pretty well with Athreos.
Not to mention, when you have 6 of them out, Athreos becomes online because your devotion hits that 7.
Yeah, so a lot of times what I found when playing it is that you play the 6th Shadowborn Apostle, or really the 5th, you swing with Athreos, and then you sack him, put a demon into play, and then the guy that you swung at just took 5 damage, and does he want to take 18 more? Because that's 6 creatures.
Yeah.
And so a lot of times they just give them back to you. We'll talk about the politics of that discussion of like, do you want to give me my creatures back or do you want to take 3 damage for them? That gets pretty intricate and is a really interesting aspect of the deck.
Especially as the game goes long.
Yeah. So that's what I decided to pair up. And then from there, I had a loose idea, but we talked about a lot of the cards that should go on there on Twitter. So the first category is demons, because... Yes. Oh, I guess we should talk really quickly about how many Shadowborn Apostles I decided to play.
Oh, right. Because you could play 99, couldn't you?
You could. It wouldn't be very good because you wouldn't have any demons to go get when you sacrifice them.
Or mana to play, I guess.
Yeah.
So 99 is not a good number. All right. So realistically, 36, 37 lands.
Right.
That gives you 63, 64. Yeah.
Cards. And I decided that I wanted about half of that to be Shadowborn Apostles. And I went with 31.
Okay. Was that just after you found other things to put in, that's where you ended up at?
Yeah, I think I started at 33. I was like, oh, I'll make a third of the deck. And then I had to take out two because there was two more cards I wanted to fit in.
Right. So I feel like that's the easiest cut, by the way, being like, oh, shoot, I need to cut a card. Well, I do have 30 plus of these cards.
Yeah.
I can get rid of one.
I did make a deal with myself when doing it that I would be hesitant to do that, and I did not want to go below 30.
Right.
So I figured it was best to play the deck. And again, I've only played it for one session, but it was best to play it with a lot of Shadowborn Apostles so I knew how that felt rather mm-hmm. than the other way where I'd be like, well, I don't know how it feels to have, you know. So it was better to start on the high end of the scale, and I feel that number was actually pretty close. 31 was pretty good.
It felt pretty good when we played against it
the other night. It felt like, yeah, about the right amount. So the first category is demons. So there's a lot of demons. They're really interesting in that demons usually have a downside for you.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of those you don't want to play. There's not actually a ton that have enter the battlefield effects. There are some. And that's really what you want, right? When you're cheating something out, it's something that just immediately has an impact.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to find enough demons that were high impact enough in that regard.
And fit the deck well.
Yeah, exactly. So the best one, and the one that you almost always go get first, is Runescarred Demon. It's 5 and 2 black, so 7 total for a 6/6 flying creature demon. And it says, when Runescarred Demon enters the battlefield, search your library for a card, put it into your hand, and then shuffle your library. So
it's Demonic Tutor.
It Demonic Tutors when it comes in. So it gives you a 6/6 flyer, and then you also go get to find any card in your deck and put it in your hand. Very powerful in EDH.
Yeah.
We'll talk later about what cards I would normally go get. But this is certainly the best demon to get in almost any situation.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, you usually just search out another Shadowborn Apostle.
No, you never search for those. You usually have tons of them.
Yeah, exactly. Next up is Harvester of Souls. And this card is great just because this totally goes along with what the deck's doing. It's a 4 and 2 black for a 5/5 creature demon with death touch, but specifically, whenever another non-token creature dies, you may draw a card. So not just your own, actually, any yeah. non-token creature.
So it protects you a little bit from board wipes, because what can happen is somebody's going to wipe the board because you've got 5 Shadowborn Apostles mm-hmm. and the Harvester. But then all of a sudden you draw a whole ton of cards because you draw it for every other creature that died too. So that was often the second demon that I would cheat out, because it just protected you so well
yeah.
From bad things that could happen. Just a very powerful card. The other thing to note about the ability on the Apostle is that it's instant speed. So you can do some things that you couldn't normally do, which is play a demon at instant speed.
Right.
So that's another reason the Runescarred's so good, and also the Harvester of Souls, because you can play them at instant speed and people don't calculate that. A good one to play at instant speed is Obnixilis Unshackled.
Yes, this is actually... Usually this card isn't that great in EDH, but the fact that you can pop him out for instant speed is great, because he kind of functions like an Aven Mindsetzer in what he does.
Yes, exactly. So he's 4 and 2 black for a 4/4 demon with flying and trample. It says whenever an opponent...
Flample.
Yeah, with flample, yep. Whenever an opponent searches his or her library, that player sacrifices a creature and loses 10 life. Oof. And then it also says, whenever another creature dies, put a 1/1 counter on Obnixilis. So both things are relevant, right?
Mm-hmm.
The 1/1 counter on him when a creature dies, well, you're sacking 6 creatures at a time pretty often, and then you're forcing an opponent to give them back to your hand. We'll talk about that again later. But a lot of the times you're getting those creatures back so you can just cast them again. So he's growing. But then the whenever an opponent searches his or her library, that player sacrifices a creature and loses 10 life. Usually, like you said, it's not that great because you put it on the table and then it just makes everybody mad.
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't actually do any damage because they just don't play their tutors.
Or if they do play it, they comfortably can do it, being like, okay, I have a token and I have 50 life, 40 life.
Yes.
I'm fine. Sure, I'll do it once. But if someone's under 10 and they do this and you get Obnixilus out, oh, man.
Well, the thing is, you can do it in response with the Shadowborn Apostles. So they put a fetch land into play. They crack it. While that's on the stack, you go, hold on. Boom.
Oh, man.
Instant speed, put Obnixilus out. They take 10 damage, sacrifice a creature.
Yeah, that's rough.
Yeah, very rough. And one of the keys to this deck is getting one of the opponents low enough that they can't afford to take the 3 damage when one of your things dies.
Mm-hmm.
Because on Athreos, it says, whenever another creature you own dies, return it to your hand unless target opponent pays 3 life. So you get to choose which of your opponents is put to that dilemma.
Oof.
And so you choose the guy who's low on life, and you say, well, do you want to take 3 damage for each of these or put them in my hand? If they got 9 life or something, they have to put them back to your hand. They can't afford to take the damage.
Yeah.
And so that's one of the goals of the deck, is to just pick on one person and get them low enough that they just have to give you your cards back.
Mm-hmm. Or just find that hapless player that is...
it's already getting whacked.
Yeah, already getting whacked
else.
Or whatever. Yep. Or like if I'm playing Marchesa, I'm already whacking myself enough.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. Another one... is Reaper from the Abyss.
Oh, yeah, I'll read this guy.
Okay.
I love that you're getting demons with these Shadowborn Apostles. Yeah.
Demons don't see enough play in EDH either. I mean, they see some, but not a ton.
I agree. And they're kind of like the, you know, they're Black's versions of Angels. You know,
yeah.
Angels see so much play, you would think that demons get a lot. But there just aren't enough that are as awesome as the Angels are, unfortunately.
Most of them are efficiency-based. So they, like, it's under-costed, but it also, like, does damage to you during your upkeep.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not that great in EDH because I don't need a 4-4 flyer for 3 mana that hits me.
Yeah, exactly.
Because the 4-4 is just not big enough.
Yeah. Reaper from the Abyss, though, is one of those cards that I think Wizards knew would be a great card in Commander because it was reprinted this year in the 2014 product. It's 3/3 black, 6 solo for a 6/6 creature demon with flying, and it has Morbid at the beginning of each end step. If a creature died this turn, destroy target non-demon creature. Holy moly, he is the Reaper indeed. So each end step. So if you have a sac outlet, you can just sac a creature at the beginning of an... you have to do it in the main phase, correct?
Well... you, for one, if you sacked 6 Shadowborn Apostles to bring this guy into play, then he
it
remembers
that turn. Yeah,
yeah, and then hopefully they're going to go back to your hand,
right?
And then if it's your main phase, you can play him again and maybe do that again, or yeah, you're going to have other sack outlets in the deck. So, you know, you're often just sacking Shadowborn Apostles just to a Phyrexian Altar or something just to trigger this guy.
Yeah, and not to mention, this is any creature's dying. So if someone else just engages in combat, or if someone wants to natural order out something else, you know, this guy gets to just point at something and just eradicate it, which is great.
And you need these, you know, the deck doesn't have a lot of room for board wipes and targeted removal. You're going to have some, but it doesn't have a room for a ton of it. So you need the demons to do that work because you can tutor for them and get them on demand.
Right.
So...
and you don't want to board wipe that often because this is actually not good for you if you board wipe usually.
Once you get a player low enough, then it's fine because they are forced to give you your cards back. But early in the game, when everybody's got enough life total, then they're liable to just be like, no, I'll take a couple damage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
The next two are the same card, basically. It's Grave Pact and Dictate of Erebos. We talked about them on last episode. They're both enchantments. They both say, whenever a creature you control is put into a graveyard from the battlefield, each other player sacrifices a creature. Dictate's worded a little different and it has flash, but basically...
yeah. It's whenever a creature you control dies, each opponent sacrifices a creature.
Yep.
Important because it says each opponent, not target opponent.
Yep.
And if you're triggering your Shadowborn Apostles, that's 6 creatures. That's
I think we had a couple games the other night where I'm like, yeah, where I was like, okay, I'm going to do this twice. I'm going to sacrifice 12 apostles, put 2 demons in play. Everybody else sacrifice 12 creatures, which is your whole board.
Yeah.
And I just cleared the board. And
does anyone want to pay life for these?
Yeah, and they're like, no. So, very powerful card. This next card is probably the best card in the deck.
Oh, yeah. We talked about this in our previous episode about cards that were banned in Modern that are good in EDH. They're banned in Modern for a reason, because they're good in EDH as well. It's Skullclamp, 1 drop, equipped creature gets +1/-1. It's funny because originally this card did not say +1/-1.
Yeah.
They wanted it to be worse, so they added the -1.
It made it better.
When a crypt creature dies, draw 2 cards. Well, every creature with 1 toughness cried out in pain and victory at the same time.
Yep.
Because they became fodder for Skullclamp.
So basically, Skullclamp turns all of your Shadowborn Apostles into pay 1 mana, draw 2 cards.
Yeah.
And then if you have an opponent that's low enough, they have to give you the Shadowborn Apostle back. Skull Clamp is so good that I actually put Steel Shaper's Gift into the deck.
Just to get two of, in case you...
Yes, and I don't have another equipment. So it's Steel Shaper's Gift is one white for a sorcery that says, search your library for an equipment card, reveal that card and put it into your hand, and then shuffle your library. Because I figure, if I already have Skull Clamp on the table and I draw Steel Shaper's Gift, who cares? I'm drawing a million cards, I have Skull Clamp on the table.
That's a really good add, because you drew, when we played last, you had you got Steel Shaper's Gift and you couldn't get anything with it.
Yep. And it's fine. You just discard it because you end up having too many cards because you've got Skull Clamp on the table. So,
but not to mention your. I mean, I would also think maybe like a Masterwork of Ingenuity might not be bad, because Skull Clamp's a pretty often played card by other players in EDH.
It's true. It's one of the most powerful cards ever printed. I mean, it's crazy. Yeah. The next one or two, they basically do the same thing. There's Blood Artist and Falconwrath Noble.
Mm-hmm.
And they both have the text of whenever Blood Artist or Falconwrath Noble or another creature dies, target player loses one life and you gain one life.
Not bad. So this and these are also skull clappable.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And, well, Falconwrath Noble.
Falconwrath, yeah.
And this gives you a way to force the issue, because what you'll find with this deck is you get somebody low, but once they're low, they just start giving you all your creatures back and they're not taking the damage from Athreos anymore. Mm-hmm. And you need a way to just, they have to take the damage. They don't have a choice. And Blood Artist and Falconwrath Noble give you that.
Yeah.
Also, the way these cards work, if you make a deal with somebody else at the table, they can guarantee give you your cards back. So you can just keep sacking them over and over and dealing damage just to the other people. And there's a combo we'll get to later. With another card where you can basically play the Shadowborn Apostles for free.
Mm-hmm.
And so then you can just machine gun people. As long as you have somebody at the table who's willing to give them back to you every time.
GP Vegas. I guess that's what we're going to have to resort to if everyone teams up on us because of our Paula trickery.
Oh, they're teaming up on us.
Yeah, well, let's go. We'll play this one. The granddaddy of all of death value cards would be Phyrexian Altar. I'm sorry. Yeah. This and Ashnod's Altar are both 3-drop artifacts that say sacrifice a creature. And in Phyrexian Altar's case, you add 1 mana of any color to your mana pool. And in Ashnod's Altar case, you had 2 colorless mana. Now, you want Phyrexian Altar more than Ashnod's because Shadowborn Apostle costs 1 black.
So let's say you have Blood Artist out and you've got Phyrexian Altar out. If you have 1 Shadowborn Apostle, then all you need to do is make a deal with somebody at the table.
Oh, right.
So if I make a deal with you, Jimmy, and I say, just give me the Shadowborn Apostle back every time, then I go, okay, sack my Shadowborn Apostle, create a black mana. The Blood Artist does 1 damage to Craig. Then you give it. Then it dies, and Athreos triggers. Do you want to take 3 damage or give it back to me?
I'll give it right back to you.
Then I use the 1 mana that I created with Phyrexian Altar to play it. Then I sack it to Phyrexian Altar. Do 1 damage to Craig. Do you want to give it back to me?
Yep, and it's an infinite loop. As long as you get 1 player to go with you.
And Jimmy, you're perfectly safe because I can't do that to you.
Yeah.
Because you just go, I'll pay 3 life.
Mm-hmm.
And then the loop's done. So you can basically team up with 1 player and kill as many players as you want once you have Phyrexian Altar and Blood Artist.
Pretty nice.
Yeah, so it's very strong. Another card is Black Market.
You just added this, didn't you? Or was it already in there?
I guess it was in there, but I never drew it, so I was like, I need to add that. And then and then Vincent was like, no, I looked through your deck, it's in there. And I was like, oh, I just never drew it. Black Market is 3 and 2 black for an enchantment. It says, whenever a creature is put into a graveyard from play, put a charge counter on Black Market. And then at the beginning of your pre-combat main phase, add black to your mana pool for each charge counter on Black Market. So if you have this out and you sacrifice 6 apostles to put a demon into play, now Black Market's creating 6 black mana for you
mm-hmm.
every turn.
And if anyone board wipes and they're like, oh, I have to get rid of Josh's apostles, I'm going to board wipe. Black Market's just like, yes.
Yeah, and you're like,
hey, hungry.
And you're like, you ask some other dude, like, hey, can I have my Shadowborn Apostles back to my hand? Sure. You take it, because I don't want to take 18 damage.
Yeah.
And then you just play them for free the next turn.
Yeah, and you get them for free. It's not like these charge counters disappear from Black Market. They stay on there.
And the next time you sack 6 dudes to it, now it has 12 counters on it.
Yeah.
The deck is very mana hungry, specifically black mana hungry.
Mm-hmm.
The next
category. Notably, you don't get the mana if they don't hit the graveyard, if they go to your hand first.
Right. Yeah, they need to. But they do hit the graveyard if it's with Athreos.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they die, and then they choose whether to return to your hand or not.
Very nice.
The next section I'm calling Recur Them All. So it's not just like I want to recur one dude, because that doesn't do me a lot of good. I need to recur all the Shadowborn Apostles mm-hmm. that are in my graveyard.
Fortunately for you, these are human clerics. Yes. So there are lots of cards that work with this, including this. Like, this was like a Walmart, like, buy some packs foil that is just like a 10-cent foil. Angel of Glory's Rise. 5 and 2 white for a 4/6 angel with flying. When Angel of Glory's Rise enters the battlefield, exile all zombies. So this could be relevant in some cases.
It could just hose people. Yeah. Like, yeah.
Then return all human creature cards from your graveyard to the battlefield.
To the battlefield.
Ooh, boy.
So if you find that your Shadowborn Apostles, they got wrath, somebody didn't give them back to you, they took the damage, you play Angel of Glory's Rise and they just come right back out onto the battlefield.
Yeah. Every yeah. single one of them.
Yeah.
Because at some point, it's going to be like, all right, Josh, the game's over. I'm not going to let you have any more of these. And you're like, Angel of Glory's Rise, win the game?
Yeah, and they're like, crap.
Yeah.
Yeah, very strong. Immortal Servitude's another one. It's 3 white, 3 black, 2 white and a black, 2 black and a white. Those are your options.
Plus X.
Plus X. And then it says, return each creature card with converted mana cost X from your graveyard to the battlefield. So it's 4 mana. Return all the apostles in your graveyard to the battlefield.
Yep.
There's 2 more cards that do similar things, Faith's Reward and No Rest for the Wicked. I won't read them, but basically they're going to return all the apostles to play or to your hand.
And usually these cards suck in EDH yeah. because all your cards have different mana costs. But in this case, because you're allowed to play
31
as many
of my cards have 1 mana cost, so I know exactly.
Yeah.
Now, talking about cards that suck generally in EDH, there is...
Oh, yeah.
We're in the cards you may not think of category now, and these are 2 cards that you would never think you would play in this format.
Yeah, Thrumming Stone.
Yeah,
a 5-drop legendary artifact. I can't believe it's legendary. Spells you control have ripple 4. Whenever you play a spell, you may reveal the top 4 cards of your library. You may play any revealed cards with the same name as the spell without paying their mana costs. Put the rest of them on your library.
This is specifically why I decided to have 30 or 31.
Yeah.
Because I wanted at least a 1 in 4 chance. I wanted higher than a 1 in 4 chance. So what you can do is you can play 3 Shadowborn Apostles, flip over the top 12 cards of your deck, and then just put any Shadowborn Apostles among those 12 cards into play.
You're probably going to get at least another 4 or 5 out of that.
Yeah. You usually get, you know, you get a little more than 1 per 4 cards. So I'd say out of 12, you're probably going to get 4.
That's very solid.
Yeah, it's just cheating things into play, which we know are the most broken things.
Yeah, and Ripple just sucks in EDH. Cause
it's horrible because you never have two
format.
Of them. Yeah, exactly. So it's a very cheap card, too. And the other one is Remembrance. It's 3 and a white for an enchantment. It says, whenever a non-token creature you control is put into a graveyard, you may search your library for a copy of that creature card. If you do, reveal the card and put it into your hand and then shuffle your library afterwards. Actually, we should read their Oracle text on this.
It's almost identical. It's just you may search your library for a card with the same name as the creature.
Yeah. So now you're...
I've been keeping track every time. I'm like, if it's too different, I'll let you know.
We get called out and it's like it's so much easier to read the card. But yeah, we should read the Oracle text. So what this does is anytime one of your Shadowborn Apostles dies, you get to search your...
Oh my gosh.
You get to search your deck for a Shadowborn Apostle and put it into your hand. So you sacrifice 6 of them to put a demon into play. You also get to put 6 of them from your deck into your hand. And then a lot of times somebody's like, well, you just got 6 more. I'll give all the original 6 back to you because what's 12 going to do?
Yeah.
And this can get out of hand so quickly where you're just holding like 20 Shadowborn Apostles in your hand.
Yeah.
And the problem with you run into there is like it's hard to cast them.
Right.
Because you just need so much mana to get these 20 Shadowborn Apostles out of your hand.
Unless you have literally the best card in the deck, I think this is it.
This is the card I go get the most often with Runescarred Demon.
You wish this was your commander.
Yeah, I think Skullclamp's the most powerful card in the deck, but I think Edgewalker is actually the most important to winning the game.
Yeah, so Edgewalker has the exact same mana cost as Athreos. It's 1 white and a black. He's a 2/2 cleric. He looks like... The art is just so funny. He looks like he's an Arabian mage of sorts, but he's a cleric. And it says, cleric spells you cast cost white, black, less to cast. This effect reduces only the amount of colored mana you pay. So, for example, if you cast a cleric with mana cost 1 in the white, it just costs 1 colorless.
Right.
So in this case, because all of these Shadowborn Apostles are clerics and they cost just black, these cost nothing. They're free.
You just play them directly onto the table.
That's
amazing.
Yeah,
I think when we were playing the other night, I played Edgewalker, and then I go, okay, and I just put 15 of Shadowborn Apostles into play, because they're all free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That was pretty nutty.
And that's another way you can get into a loop where you can win the game with Blood Artist and one player that's willing to work with you.
Yeah.
Because now your Shadow Moor Apostles are coming out for free.
And you're just constantly, you just sack them in. You don't even need the Ashnod's Altar in that case.
Correct. So there's some trap cards. We haven't actually done this category in a while for a deck tech, but it was interesting for this one because I'm just building the deck and playing it for the first time. And I noticed when playing that I had some cards in there that I thought they were going to be good and they weren't that good. So there's three cards that I had in. There was Zathrid Necromancer, Rotlung Reanimator, and Requiem Angel. And what they all do is basically make tokens when your dudes die. So Zathrid Necromancer and Rotlung Reanimator, they make 2/2 zombies when your cleric or your humans die.
Mm-hmm.
And then Requiem Angel makes 1/1 spirits, flying spirits, when your non-tokens die. So what I found was, like, that's just not how the deck's going to win.
Right.
So what happens
is... It gives you some guys, but you're not trying to just hit people in the face to win, right?
It's just... The whole rest of the deck is not trying to do anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're like, oh, I get 6 zombies. Man. But I can't use them in any interesting way, so unless I can just smack you with them, it doesn't really do anything. And I'd rather have another card that gets my engine going than I would, you know, have a couple zombies.
Right. Well, it's funny, your zombie... I mean, the demons you're fetching out, too, you would think, like, oh, maybe those are the beaters. Like, no, those guys are kind of acting like enchantments or sorceries or instants, you know.
And you'll just swing with them, but the deck's not really trying to win through, like, a 6/6 flyer hitting you.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's basically trying to force you to take enough damage through Athreos and Blood Artist and Falconwrath Noble, basically.
Yeah.
And I created a new category. This
one's exciting. Are we going to put this into...
I don't know if this is going to be for every deck because we can't always come up with cards for the category. But for this one, I called it On the Fence.
On the Fence.
So these are cards I'm not sure about. I'm not sure if they should be in or not.
Now, trap cards used to be in this, right? And then they became trap cards.
Now,
they fell off the fence.
I actually know that Zathrid Necromancer, Rotlung Reanimator, and Requiem Angel are probably incorrect in the deck. These next three cards, I'm not sure. So it's Coat of Arms, Maw of Obzedot.
Maw of the Obzedot.
And Akroma's Memorial. So Coat of Arms, we know, we've talked about it all the time. It basically... I don't know. Do you want to read it?
Yeah. Coat of Arms is each creature gets +1/+1 for each other creature on the battlefield that shares at least one creature type with it. So, for example, if you have 2 goblin warriors and a goblin shaman are on the battlefield, they both get +2/+2 because they're both goblins. So there's 2 different kinds of goblins out there. So in this case, every cleric would get +1/+1 for each other human cleric.
So if you have 6 clerics, they'd all get +5/+5.
Ooh, boy.
So that sounds really great. And it might be right to play it because I did find myself in many situations where I had, you know, upwards of 10 Shadowborn Apostles on the battlefield. Now, they didn't have haste, so that's a downside, you know, but if they did last an entire rotation of the table, and sometimes they do because you're just holding up mana threatening to sacrifice them. So a lot of times it feels pointless for your opponents to actually board wipe.
Right.
Because they know, even if they do that, somebody's going to give them back to you because they don't want to take all the damage from Athreos, or you're going to sack them and put a demon into play that's going to make you draw a whole ton of cards for everything that dies. So I don't know. Coat of Arms might be right. A Maw of Obzedot is similar. It's 3 and...
Orzhov.
Yeah, 3 and Orzhov. And you basically sacrifice a creature, and then all your creatures get +1/+1 until end of turn.
Yeah, I could... I mean, this one's on the fence more so than Coat of Arms.
Because it does have a sacrifice outlet in it.
Yeah, that's nice. I do like Coat of Arms a little bit, though, because if someone does board wipe, you can just play your guys out again, and they're just huge.
Yeah, that's
Whereas
true.
Whereas with Maw of the Obzedot, if... this guy dies, then his whole ability is just kind of meh, you know, because he's easy to remove alongside the other clerics. But it's also good because it's a great way to just have a sac outlet. And this deck likes those, especially with Blood Artist and all that stuff. And the other demon that draws you cards, you know.
Yep.
Not to mention it's a great combat trick if someone doesn't realize, you know, they can swing into you and be like, what are you gonna do? Like quadruple block? It's like, no, I'm gonna block with one guy and just sack two dudes.
Yeah. And then I'm just going to get those two dudes back.
Yeah, exactly.
And I have Grave Pact out, so you got to sack two dudes.
Yeah.
You know? Like, you can get pretty hairy.
I feel like if you had more effects that worked, if you had better ways to get Grave Pact and stuff out, that would be a definite viable way of winning the game because it is very prohibitive when you are able to get that engine going.
I mean, yeah, I have Enlightened Tutor and an Idyllic Tutor, so I do have four Grave Pact / Dictative Erebos effects in the deck, which, you know, is okay.
Yeah, it's okay.
Yeah. And then the next one, do you want to read this
one? Oh, yes, Akroma's Memorial. I love this card.
Yeah.
I think you might be better off with the other one, though. That forces...
Problem is it doesn't give him any power. So.
Ah, that's right, yeah. Akroma's Memorial is a 7-drop artifact, and creatures you control have flying, first strike, vigilance, trample, haste, and protection from black and from red.
Yeah. So it gives him everything, and really what you want is haste.
Yeah, the haste is the big one.
Yeah, so you'd still need Maw of Obsidot or Coat of Arms to really... Because it's like, oh no... You're attacking
these 1/1
with
flying
1/1s.
Tramplers.
Yeah. So scary.
First strike. I mean, yeah.
They have protection from color, from red and black.
I mean, it'd make them really good to group block something because of first strike.
First strike, I guess.
I'm trying to think of the other. What is the other one that forces you to sacrifice a creature, otherwise you sacrifice? Eldrazi Monument.
Yes.
I think this might be nice just because
that's actually
it's a 5-drop. Creatures you get control get +1/+1, have flying and are indestructible, but not haste, unfortunately.
Haste is, I feel like, one of the things you want, but I want haste and yeah. I want it needs to give him power and haste.
Yeah. Well, Eldrazi Monument costs 2 less, but it also says at the beginning of your upkeep, sacrifice a creature, and if you can't, then you have to sacrifice Eldrazi Monument. So you're kind of already wanting to sack guys.
Yeah.
I can see that being a downside, though, if you need, like, 6 and you have, you know, 5 in play and you're like, crap, I have to sack one now.
I could easily see a situation where you they all died and somebody put them back in your hand, but you don't actually have a creature on the battlefield
yet.
Oh,
to sack to it. Yeah, that's true.
I mean, I guess let's put this to the listeners. I think the perfect card is something that gives haste and grants a power boost.
So you're saying you want Akroma's Eldrazi Memorial Mont.
Yeah. Yes. Akroma's Memorial Mont. Yeah, so it has to be in black, white, or artifact because mm-hmm. I don't have, you know, it'd be easy if I was in green and red because they just do that. But
yeah,
so that's the big thing. Interested to hear people's thoughts on that stuff, the on the fence stuff, and how to,
yeah.
And maybe the deck doesn't need it. You know, the deck does have a problem though, where at a certain point people just go, yeah, I'm just not taking any more damage from Athreos. You can just take every card that dies back to your hand. How are you going to kill me?
Yeah.
You know,
like, I dare you, like, figure it out. Where's your win con? You don't have Crater Hoof Behemoth in there, clearly.
Yeah. And if I can block your Demon Flyers, then what do you got? You got nothing else really. You know, you need Blood Artist or Falcon Wrath Noble, and those are the only two cards that guarantee do damage that they can't do much about.
Yeah.
So that's it's a super fun deck to play.
We'll talk about that in a little bit. Just fighting through, playing against this deck is a trip.
Yeah. So, okay, speaking of, let's talk about how to combat this deck.
Well, clearly board wipes.
Yeah. The thing about board wipes is they really only work early.
Mm-hmm.
Once you have a player that's low enough on life, then they can Wrath, and you're just going to get the cards back into your hand.
Yeah.
But if everybody's at 40 life, then they just go, well, I'll give you 2 of them back, and I'll take 12 damage, you know?
Yeah.
And that doesn't... That's, like, really disappointing.
They're kind of daring you at that point to be like, can you still do it?
How many do you actually need?
Yeah.
Yeah. And it takes a little while to get 6 apostles out onto the table, and usually you're not just sitting there with, you know, another 6, you know, as a spare tire.
Yeah, I mean, what's the chances of you actually drawing 6
in a row
with the right amount of mana to just play it? You know, because it is 1 black, so you need a lot of black sources in here. Is Urborg in this deck?
Yes, Urborg's definitely in there.
Has to be in there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, if you can't board wipe, then I'd say Mass Exiling is definitely the next one.
Now, yeah, Merciless Eviction or something like that,
which you run in the deck. Yeah, funnily enough.
Yeah, because what you can do is sack your guys
before it happens.
And that's the thing. Merciless Eviction is scary, but it's not going to work if they can sack it in response. But if they can't, if they don't have the mana up or they've only got 5 apostles,
mm-hmm.
it can just hose them because you're not prepared for that. That doesn't trigger Athreos because they don't die. They get exiled.
Yep. Yeah, Mass Exiling is pretty rough because all those cards just going bye-bye. There's not much you can do about that then.
Yep.
I like this third category. Yeah, life gain. Usually not relevant, but this deck isn't looking to kill you with its commander. Although Athreos definitely can get in there and kind of end things.
He's activated often, but the thing is that you need people to be low on life so that they have to give you the cards back when they die. And so we played one of the first games we played where I played this deck. For whatever reason, somebody had a Sarah Ascendant, then you stole it. Somebody else had another lifelink creature, and I was like, looking around the table, and everybody's at like 52 life.
Yeah, everyone had some kind of lifelink, where usually one person at most has some kind of lifelink going on.
And so if one person does, no problem. You just don't target them. But I was like, well, I can't ask any of these people because they're just going to take the damage and not giving me my cards back. you know, and you really need early on for them to not take the damage. And so that's, it's just sort of a thing that, that puts the brakes on the deck and makes it harder to play.
Graveyard Hate's the last one here. Although ideally you would never have to deal with Graveyard Hate.
Really, it's the type of Graveyard Hate like Anafenza that's really scary, which is that the thing never even gets to go to the graveyard, so Athreus is never even triggered. That stuff really can hurt you.
Yeah, that really just houses you, huh?
Yeah, that's tough because Athreus just doesn't work at all.
Yeah.
So well, you played against the deck, Jimmy. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
Yeah.
You know, we're in an interesting position here.
It is, yeah. So you, Josh playtested this. We were playing with Craig and Vincent the
and
other
Abby.
Night. And Abby, yeah, Abby played as well.
Abby housed us.
Yeah, because of a card named Iona. Happens to be very good against a deck that wants to play a bunch of black creatures named Shadowborn of the Blood.
Well, and Vincent was playing mono black.
I know. It was a clear choice.
She put out Iona, and I just start flipping cards from the top of my deck going, well, let's see how many cards I would have to draw to be able to... And I literally didn't have a single card in the deck that could deal with Iona,
It was funny, too, because I was helping... Abby's just learning how to play, and I gave her the Kalia deck because she liked putting... You know, I mean, it is...
Kalia deck's totally awesome.
Yeah, it's great. It's like, hey, guess what I get to put out right now? And she looked at a card, and She even knew.
She even knew.
Yeah.
Is this right?
Yeah.
She goes, how's that possible? And I looked over and I go, Iona?
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even see the card. I just heard the conversation.
Yeah. I said something like, well, you're going to make a couple people just really not be able to have much fun. And Josh was like, it's Iona. but yeah, I played against this against the deck, and you correctly, politically wise, chose me to give you the choice of whether you got the creatures back, because I'm of course just gonna be like, go for it, dude.
Well, we also had to team up because Craig had a Sarah Ascendant on turn one
with Rafik as his commander, so even more terrifying.
So I was like, dude, we need to,
because he hit you in the face for a 16
on like turn three, four. It was brutal, but. So we had to team up, and that was great because I was like, Jimmy, we're a team, right? Yep.
Yeah.
Okay, can I have these cards back when they die?
I mean, I was going to give them back to you anyway. Yeah. But the thing is, it was interesting because we played a couple more games, and every single time you asked me the question, it always went through my head like, should I?
It's
how
hard
many
to
can
know.
I give back? Because it's not like one of those things where it's like, all right, Josh has four out. If I give him two back, I take six damage, and then I have to assume that he doesn't have any number of these cards or whatever. But even then, like... Does it really matter? Do I care if he searches for a demon? Are these one ones that worth it? And it was really interesting because you're always combating that over just like, I could just make him my ally and just have him not point his hate at me for a while. And I don't know if the deck has enough power to go in the super long game to take out multiple players, or if I'm just kind of trying to use him as the tool to, you know, be on my side and get rid of maybe one other person because I know I'm clear of the firing line for now.
I mean, all those decisions are so interesting. And like, it's one of the things where, you know, you build a deck. I'm sure many people do this. And the first thing you do is sort of goldfish it out.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we call it when you just play it out solitaire and just draw seven cards, draw your card per turn, play your land, just see how it feels playing against nobody. And it was really hard to do that with this deck because I was like, I'd get to the point where I'd be like, and then I sacrifice all six. How many will I get back?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Should I have best case like scenario mentality?
Should I pretend all six? Should I just get two? I mean, I think I can probably convince somebody to give them all back to me.
Yeah.
Like either somebody's low on life and they have to, or else somebody's getting teamed up on and they just need me as an ally, so they do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but you never know. So it's really hard to sort of simulate that part of the deck, which is a huge part of the deck, which is basically negotiating with somebody at the table to allow you to get the cards back when you want to.
Yeah, it was interesting too because at first I was all about like, yeah, sure, just take them back or whatever. And at a certain point you did just very much turn on me and just started hitting me in the face. And I realized it was because Vincent got to the point where he couldn't say no to you.
Yes.
And that was exactly the moment where you're like, time to switch allies. And it was the right thing to do because at that point, you know, you now, instead of having someone just on your side, now you're holding someone hostage.
Yes,
they're gonna
I didn't
fight
need
for you.
An ally anymore.
Yeah.
I just had Vincent who had to. He had no choice.
Because he's at such a low life total.
Yeah, if he doesn't give me the cards back, he dies.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like, okay, well, now I'm good.
Yeah, and at that point, he was at like something like 18 life. And it's not even sure he could have given you three back or whatever, but like, is he willing to go below 10 life so that you can possibly have a slightly slower turn?
But so,
like,
yeah,
it's like
so
you have scope
three
plan.
Less
you have,
one ones.
Yeah, you have so many other ways to get those cards back into your hand that it is best for him just to be like, just take all of them.
And also, like, these creatures are so innocuous that it's easy to talk yourself into giving them back, because it's like, well, what am I doing? I'm giving him back a one mana 1/1.
Yeah, and people at the table aren't going to really hate you for that either.
Yeah.
You know, you're just giving them back pretty insignificant creatures, at least what seems like that.
Yeah, it was very interesting to see that decision tree and also try and manipulate it into the what I wanted to have happen. And literally, there were times where I was like, I want them to take the damage. So I'd point it at the enemy and be like, well, you can decide. And then it's sometimes it sucked. Like, I remember we got to a point where I was like, oh, I need to start doing damage. So Craig, I'm sacrificing 12 guys. What do you want to do? And he goes, yeah, you can have them all back. And I was like, crap, I want you to take damage, you know?
Ooh, and so, the double-edged sword.
Yeah.
Interesting.
So it's very...
Yeah, that's one of the ways you can kill someone, is just kind of burn them out, I guess, with your apostles
just
and
Just have them misplay it, take a little too much damage, and then I can... So the deck needs some work. I think it needs some way to just punch a bunch of damage.
And just finish someone off.
Yeah, because it's giving them a choice, and at a certain point, they just... say no, I'll just give you every card back. I don't care. I can't. I'm not going to just let that.
Well, this
kill
deck
me.
Does surprisingly well in terms of just giving you chump blockers too.
Yeah, oh yeah.
You know, it disincentivizes people to attack you, because if they know you're just going to turn to this guy or whoever, and they're going to just give you the creatures back, they're like, well, I didn't tap out for no reason. You know.
Yeah.
I wanted to actually mean something if I'm going to swing out at you. So trample, I guess, is good against this deck too.
Yeah, it would be really good actually.
Yeah.
Okay, let's talk about really quick before we wrap. Let's talk about fighting through their disruption. So the stuff they're going to use to combat your deck, we talked about board wipes, mass exile, life game, graveyard hate. You know, I think one of the things we don't talk about in this category enough is just how you play the deck.
Uh-huh.
And I think concentrating on one player is really important, because you, like you said, you want to get to the point where you have somebody hostage so that if your creatures die, they can't afford to take the damage. They have to give them back to you.
Yeah, and so, just hope that they're also high enough that someone else doesn't kill them. So you always have that person.
So I'm usually a proponent of not attacking people, like of using the option of attack no one more often.
Well, yeah, and plus you're swinging with like 5/1s. That's not significant enough.
Normally it's bad, but in this deck, you just need to get damage on them, because you need, you know, once you start sacrificing creatures, you want them to be scared to take that damage. So you need to sort of like lock onto one person and get them low enough that they have to give you your creatures back. And that's really dangerous, because you're making an enemy. So you just sort of have to look around and pick somebody, you know, that you think won't be able to retaliate quickly, and get them really to the point where every time your creature dies, they have to put it back into your hand.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's why you have so many sac outlets plus stuff like Merciless Eviction, so that you are able to control the board in a way. I mean, another way of doing it is just waiting to see where the table naturally takes it. And in general, you're not playing a deck that has a high threat level. You know, you come out of the gate swinging with nothing, really. Someone else is playing Rafik. You know, who are they going to turn towards? You know, who's the Rafik player going to turn towards? Obviously, he's not just going to come after you if someone else is beating down on him. You know, so I think it is easy to sit back a little bit with this deck, because you have tons of chump blockers. You can even put out demon chump blockers in the sky if you have to. Hold
but
up some board
wipes.
It's
the worst when you have to sacrifice your apostles and then you don't get them back.
Yeah.
You know, and then it's just like, well, I just 6-for-1 to myself, basically. You know, I got rid of 6 cards to get 1 card out. It's not a very good deal if you don't get some Shadowbound Apostles back.
Yeah,
so.
Or through any of the number of cards that you have that can bring them all back at once.
And so the last thing I would say is I put in like Utter End, Vindication. I want like really versatile removal spells.
Right.
Because the deck, like I said, it just, you're playing 31 of the same card and then a whole bunch of other synergy cards. You don't have a lot of slots for stuff. So you just need your removal to be as versatile as possible. And so those type of cards are really good. I'm actually thinking about putting like Ghostly Prison in, and a couple other just like deter cards.
Yeah, I think Ghostly Prison would fit really well in here. Maybe a card like All Is Dust or Karn.
Yeah.
Just so you have more get rid of permanent specifically.
Yeah. I like Karn. I think Karn's a really good one. I mean, obviously, I'm going to hope to pull one.
You're going to want to exile a Shadowborn Apostle out of your hand so that when you restart the game, you have some Shadowborn Apostles back on the battlefield.
That's a good point. Yeah, you can get to the point where you have too many cards in hand, too. That was something I found, is that Reliquary Tower is really important to the deck.
Ugin would be great. Yeah, I think Ugin would be nice.
All right.
Even a card like Elspeth, kind of, the board wipe one, because you can at least get rid of card.
Get rid of four, power. It doesn't
four
get rid of your apostles. Yeah, it's actually a really good idea. The deck's super fun to play. Once the engine gets going, you can do a lot.
Yeah. out of nowhere too. That's the great part. You only need one. That's the other thing. You only need one black mana to sack six creatures.
Yeah.
That's actually really good value. Usually you don't think about sacrificing creatures like on cheap, but being able to do that for six and having a grave packed out or something is pretty deadly.
Yeah. Once the engine gets going, you can sort of like kill every creature on the board while you're putting out stuff. It's just that final punch that you really need in the deck, and I'm still sort of looking for.
Yeah.
So. Anxious for anybody's suggestions out there. I know some people on Twitter had either played against or they had decks similar to this. So in the comment section on Rocket Jump, I would love to hear, you know, anybody's experiences or ideas for just how to give it that final, you know, sort of death blow that it needs to sort of finish people off. So, yeah, cool.
Great deck. A lot of fun to play against. Hopefully we'll get to see. I mean, I'm excited for Vegas because I feel like our meta is pretty strange because of the decks you bring in. Craig has Infect. Kessler has brews that are also for Elder Highlander. So there's like all these weird decks floating around our meta. And I think it's going to be really fun to match them up against the more quote-unquote traditional EDH decks that you would see.
I think a lot of our listeners have really cool decks, though. When they post them on Twitter, they have interesting stuff that I've never seen. You know, one of the great things for us is going to be just exposure to stuff we haven't seen. I mean, we have a healthy meta and we have a pretty big play group and we see a lot of stuff. I mean, Craig has 40 of his own decks, but we still don't see everything that's out there. And so it's just going to be great for us and for the show to see a lot of different things that we may have never come in contact with before. So bring your coolest stuff. We want to see it. And then, you know, hopefully we'll be able to talk about it on the show.
Yeah.
And, you know, it'll help us out in the long run.
Oh, another thing that I'm probably going to mention a few times before we get to Vegas, but it is just general. Make sure you guys are watching after your stuff when we are all there, because we're all going to be excited. We're all going to bring out our decks and our cool stuff and have stuff floating around. And EDH collections, I think, are in general pretty valuable. So Vegas is going to be a very busy convention. There are no doubt going to be things that are going to be stolen and taken from the convention hall. So just make sure you guys are wary when we are playing. And I'll make sure to always, of course, reiterate this when we're out there too.
Yeah, good advice. Good advice.
Yeah. All right, let's move to the end step.
The end step, we got a cool one.
Yeah, this is a great one, actually. This one is really, this is like a game changer for me. If I was a kid, or actually right now, I'll let you explain it.
Well, I mean, if you are interested in filmmaking in any, or storytelling from an audiovisual standpoint in any way, not just that you're going to do it, but you're just, you know, it's fun to see how things are made and ways to make things, even when you're just watching things of your own. Well, Rocket Jump has started the Rocket Jump Film School. So the links will be in the show notes, but you can find it on the Rocket Jump homepage. And there's all kinds of tutorial videos. They've got forums. They've done a ton of stuff already.
Yeah, camera reviews, talking about different price lenses, light stuff. I mean, it's amazing how much stuff they've already covered.
It's amazing, and it's super helpful, and I'm just like you, man. If I wish that this stuff existed when I was starting out. You know, it would have been such a head start.
Yeah, I watch these videos, and I still learn a lot. I mean, that's the thing. I mean, here's the thing. The people that are running it, Lauren Haritunian is the dean. Freddie's a huge part of it. We have John Salmon, the DP for VGHS. All these people went to what people regard as the best film school in the country. And
well, not just that. They've been actually making content that millions of people have been watching for years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and they went to what is the Harvard Law for film school, which is USC, Fight On. And it's just awesome.
Yeah, their tuition costs a lot, and they are giving a free film school to everyone.
Yeah, I think, you know, Lauren's the dean. She did say, like, this is not meant to be a substitute for actual film school.
Right.
But, you know, I'm involved in the entertainment industry. You are. I didn't go to school for it. I went to school for theater.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I didn't learn anything about making films when I was in college. And this stuff would have been so helpful to me.
Yeah.
You know, I had to learn just as I went because I was interested in it. And some of the concepts are crazy. And you know, another great thing they do is they keep it at the level of a person. Like, they're not talking about $100,000 cameras and lenses that you can't afford. In fact, one of the coolest videos they have is a lens comparison, which is basically they took, I don't know if listeners know about camera lenses on cameras that they use to film, like TV shows and movies, are super expensive. Some of the lenses are more expensive than the cameras very often.
Some of the lenses are the price of a house.
Yeah.
I'll just say that much. So, up to $200,000 for a single lens.
So they did this thing where they took a $1,000 lens, a $15,000 lens, a $100,000 lens.
Actually, one of them was a $50 lens.
A $50 lens.
Yeah.
And they did a comparison and they took like the DPs, that's director of photography, cinematographers, Freddie, Jamie's brother. Didn't Jamie?
Yeah, Jamie was the
CFO. He's a finance guy.
He's like the
know
blind
anything.
Test to see, you yeah. know, if it really made a difference. A trained eye versus someone that never that knew nothing about lenses.
Yeah, and so you find out from that video, that tutorial, like, is it worth it to spend a ton of money on lenses? I mean, yeah. which is a huge question, and you would have trouble solving that on your own.
Yeah, you wouldn't have the know-how or the access to just rent these different lenses. And it was interesting. Everyone, they showed the they did like blind tests of the lenses, just showing the footage, and they had them guess which one was which. And at the end of the day, Jamie got 6 out of 18 right, which means he literally was statistically exactly 1/3, which is what you would get if you just randomly guessed. John Salmon got 7 out of 18, which is
he's the professional cinematographer. He got yeah. one more.
And Sean Dixon, the cinematographer, also got 8 out of 18. So people that are professionals that have worked every single day of the past like 8 years with these cameras,
they were like
pretty much on par.
Better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was great too because John also explained why some of those cameras are better, because like the focus rings, it, you know, there's more control in that and the different bokeh you get from the lights in the background and stuff. But overall, like, it was really cool just to see, like, hey, you don't need this super high professional equipment to make something that is great. It's more about the what you're making, not the stuff that you're using to make it.
Yeah, I think a great quote that your brother had was that there's a lot of stuff on the internet that shows you how to do things
mm-hmm.
From a filmmaking perspective, but there's not that much stuff that tells you why to do things. And this is sort of covering that angle in addition to the how, but it's also telling you, like, here's a tool and here's the point in the story where you might use that tool or why yeah. you might use that tool. And so super helpful. Again, if you're interested in filmmaking in any way, mm-hmm. definitely check it out.
Well, I mean, as an actor, it's so important to, I mean, as an actor, you do theater stuff, but you never get a chance to walk onto a film set. And when you're on a film set, there's all sorts of jargon like flying around. There's lingo, things, people moving stuff. And like as an actor, sometimes you're just like frozen in the middle of it. But it's so valuable to know, like, okay, cool. I noticed that they're switching lenses here. So I got to make sure that I know that now when they're filming me, it's from the shoulder up instead of my full body. So I can't be just like flailing my arms around like I did in the last scene because it's not going to read as well. And there's like small things like that, small edges you can help, you know, improve your acting game, I guess, which is nice. So,
very
yeah.
cool. I would definitely highly recommend it. And you know, I think
even if you don't know anything about
filmmaking, even if you're not even interested yeah. in doing it, it'll probably you'll learn a lot just about the process. And we all watch movies and TV shows.
Oh, so, yeah.
Yeah.
It's great to go behind the curtain.
Definitely check it out. Go behind the curtain. Go yeah. to Oz.
I guess it's not the curtain so much as like go behind the set.
Go behind the camera.
Go behind the camera.
Go behind the lights.
All the links will be in the show notes for the Rocket Jump Film School. And as always, make sure you guys check us out. We are on iTunes. Leave us a review there. That helps us get more publicity, I guess. Yeah, it helps us get our name out there. More exposure, yeah. And we get to have awesome prizes to give out to you guys. We have a ton of stuff we're going to give out at GP Vegas. That is the accumulation of everything that Wizards has sent us that we haven't given out for prizes yet. So the
we've
banks.
We've got a whole booster boxes. We've got
play mats. We've got dual decks. We got
fat packs.
Fat packs,
there's a lot of stuff.
Yeah, so it's going to be really fun. And of course, we're going to be bringing some of our own product to a crack and open some conspiracy drafts and stuff, I'm sure. So.
I'm sure there'll be some Modern Masters 2015 in there too.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of Modern Masters, the Masters of Modern podcast, our sister podcast.
What a great name they found right before Masters of Modern Masters came out. Yeah, right. How did the Command Zone come up with their name? That's what I want to know.
We're just creative people, everybody. You can, yeah. Alex and Ben, the hosts of that, you can find them on Twitter at the MMCast, and mm-hmm. you can also find their podcast at rocketjump.com right beside ours. It's called The Masters of Modern. They talk about all things modern. They also just talk about competitive magic in general.
Yeah.
So they've had awesome guests. Definitely go check them out.
Yep. All right. So we will see you guys next time. Remember, post on the Rocket Jump page if you guys want to add to the discussion.
Help me build my deck so that I stand a chance in Vegas. Help me.
Absolutely.
Help me help you.
Or give him some bad advice. And
don't
see if
do that.
Don't do that. Don't do that, guys. Definitely.
All right, everybody. Thanks for listening.
All right. We'll see you next time.
Peace.
Thank you for your attention. For further inquiries, send an email to commandcast@rocketjump.com or ask us on Twitter at JF Wong and at Josh Lee Kwai. See you later, alligator.
Greetings, humans.